Welcome back to another deep dive. I want to start today by asking you to do something a little weird. Just take a second and listen. Listen to the hum of your refrigerator. Maybe look at the little percentage sign on your phone battery. We live our lives completely tethered to this this massive invisible web.
You don't even think about it.
Not at all. Centralized power lines, data centers thousands of miles away, supply chains that snake across oceans.
Until it breaks.
Exactly, until it breaks. And when it does, it's not a small thing.
No, it tends to cascade. We've seen it happen.
Right. It's that feeling in your gut when the power goes out and suddenly you realize just how fragile modern life is.
Suddenly you can't cook, you can't work.
You can't communicate. And the sources we're digging into today, they actually have a name for this feeling. They call it linear fragility.
It's a perfect term for it. Think of the, you know, the old school Christmas lights, the cheap ones.
Oh, I know exactly where you're going. One bulb burns out.
And the whole string goes dark. That is our current grid. It's a linear chain. If one link snaps a storm in Texas, a server outage, a cable cut in the ocean, the whole thing goes down.
So the big question we're wrestling with today is, okay, what if the solution isn't just patching up that string of lights?
What if the solution is just throwing the whole string away?
It's a pretty radical idea. We're diving into a stack of documents, manifestos, white papers, these urgent dispatches from a group called DeReticular. I have to admit, when I first saw the name, I thought it sounded like a medical condition.
It does sound a bit clinical, but the name is the mission statement. Reticular means net-like, this complex, centralized network.
So to DeReticular is to undo the net.
To untangle it, exactly. Okay. The material we have here creates a roadmap for what they call a post-grid civilization.
And we should probably mention this is not old news. These documents are dated late January to February 10th, 2026.
This is happening right now.
The tone is so urgent. It feels less like a corporate brochure and more like a, I don't know, survival guide.
It is very fresh. They're outlining a plan for what they call sovereign infrastructure. The goal is to build systems that are self-healing and self-financing.
Okay, self-financing is the part that really caught my eye. We'll get to that. Because the idea that a power grid could pay for itself sounds like magic to me. But first, let's stick with the problem. We talked about linear fragility. The Christmas lights, what's the alternative?
The alternative they propose is spherical resilience.
Which sounds cool, but what does it actually mean?
Okay, imagine a starfish. If you cut off one of its legs, the starfish doesn't die.
Right.
In fact, the leg can often grow back, or the starfish just keeps going. That's spherical resilience. It's a system where every unit, every home, every neighborhood is a self-contained sphere.
So if the main grid goes down, the sphere just keeps spinning on its own.
Precisely. And DeReticular is positioning itself not as the company building the bubbles, but as the platform operator.
The OS. The operating system for this new world.
That's what they want to be.
This is where the tech gets really interesting. I was reading about this transparency paradox in the notes. It seems like a huge hurdle for anyone trying to build this kind of stuff in, like, rural areas.
It's the main hurdle.
But I didn't quite get the connection. Why is transparency such a big deal for keeping the lights on?
It all comes down to money. Let's say you want to build a solar farm in a remote village in Uganda.
Okay.
To build that, you need capital. You need investors.
Sure.
But if you're a banker in London or New York, how do you know that solar farm even exists? How do you know it's actually running?
You send an auditor, right?
Oh, yeah.
A guy with a clipboard.
Exactly. But sending a guy in a suit to a remote district in Uganda is incredibly expensive. It's slow. And, you know, the guy in the suit can be bribed. This is the transparency paradox. You need transparency to get the money to build the thing, but the systems for transparency are too expensive for the project to afford. So these places just stay dark.
So you're stuck. You can't prove you're legit, so you don't get the funding, so you can't build the thing that would prove you're legit.
That's the cycle. And that's what DeReticular wants to break with a piece of technology called RIOS.
R-I-O-S, the Rural Infrastructure Operating System.
Right. It's an AI-native operating system designed to manage electrons, data, and mobility. But the magic trick isn't just managing the power. It's proving the power exists.
And this is where we get into that automated notary idea.
Yes. But to get that, we have to look at a specific technology they use. It's called radio frequency fingerprinting, or RFF.
I highlighted that section because it sounded like sci-fi. Physical truth. What does that even mean?
Well, think about digital security for a second. If I send you an email, how do you really know it's from me?
Well, it comes from your address. Maybe it has a digital signature.
Sure, but those are software keys. Someone could hack my account, they could spoof my address. Identity is just code, and code can be copied. But dearticular is dealing with hardware, physical things. And when a physical device, like an inverter on a solar panel, transmits a signal, it's not perfect. The soldering might be a micron thicker on one side, or the antenna has a microscopic scratch. These tiny physical imperfections create a unique distortion in the radio wave.
Like a voice print.
Even better, it's like a fingerprint. You can't fake it because you can't clone the physical chaos of the atoms in that specific device.
So Rios uses this, fingerprinting, to verify the identity of every single machine in the network.
Yes. So if a solar panel says, "I just generated 5 kilowatts," Rios looks at the signal and says, "Yep, I recognize the physical fingerprint of that specific panel. It is telling the truth."
That's the game changer.
It is, because now you don't need the guy in the suit with the clipboard. The machine proves its own existence. It proves its own work.
Which leads to the automated notary. I love that phrase. It's like the machine is stamping its own legal documents.
That's essentially what's happening. The documents mention layer 3 horizon verification, which is a mouthful, I
A
know.
bit, yeah.
But just think of it as a digital receipt. The hardware does the work. It signs a cryptographic receipt using its unique physical fingerprint, and it posts that receipt to a blockchain.
So going back to our banker in London.
The banker doesn't need to trust the villager. He doesn't need a middleman. He just looks at the blockchain, sees the mathematically verified receipt that says power generated, and boom, a smart contract can automatically release the next bit of funding.
That is wild. It turns a piece of hardware in a field into a trusted financial entity.
It creates what they call trustless liquidity. The money flows because physics proves the truth.
Okay, so that's the how. Let's talk about the where. The documents call this whole network a global nervous system, Project Octagon.
And notice the language. They don't call it a portfolio. They call it a decentralized organism.
Yeah, that felt very biological, like they're building a creature, not a company. And looking at the map they provided, the locations seem kind of random. You've got Canada, Arizona, and Uganda. Why there?
They're different organs of the organism. Let's start with a node 2 in Canada. That's the brain.
The brain, okay.
Canada is where the IP lives. It's the profit engine based on software and licensing. It's stable, safe, the control center.
Got it.
But then you go to node 3 in Quartzsite, Arizona.
The blast furnace.
Have you ever been to Quartzsite?
I have not, but the name paints a pretty vivid picture. Heat, dust, maybe some Mad Max vehicles.
You're not far off. It's this fascinating place that just explodes in population in the winter. Hundreds of thousands of RVs, nomads, retirees, all descending on the middle of the desert.
So the infrastructure has to handle that crazy spike in demand.
Exactly. That's seasonal surge infrastructure. A traditional grid hates that. It wants steady, predictable usage. But Dearticular is using Node 3 as the forge to test their systems in a gritty, high-stress environment.
The documents also mentioned something about NEMT, non-emergency medical transportation. That seemed like a curveball.
It does, but it goes back to Rios being an operating system for mobility, too.
Oh, right.
If you have a fleet of electric vans taking seniors to appointments, those vans are just big batteries on wheels. Rios manages their charge, their location, their data, just like it manages a solar panel.
So the van becomes another node in the mesh.
Correct. Now, let's jump over to Node 4, the Kabong District in Uganda.
The economic engine.
This is where the humanitarian side meets the capitalist side. The goal here is to break the cycle of poverty.
You hear that phrase a lot. It usually means a charity drops off some bags of rice and leaves. How is this different?
Because this isn't charity, it's business. Remember the self-financing concept.
Right.
In Kabong, they're setting up these sovereign nodes. And because of the automated notary we talked about, these nodes can tap into decentralized finance DeFi. They can get loans to expand based on their own verified performance.
So the infrastructure literally pays for itself.
It pays for itself, and then it generates profit for the community. Instead of some foreign utility company coming in, extracting fees, and sending profits back to Europe, the node keeps the value local. It powers the local mill, the local school. The profits stay in the district.
It effectively turns the power grid into a community-owned bank.
That's the vision. Infrastructure as an asset, not a liability.
But you can't run all this with just robots. The documents spend a surprising amount of time on people. I love this job title they invented, the sovereign power technician. the SPT.
This is one of the most compelling parts of their whole manifesto. They describe the SPT not as a worker, but as a firmware update for the human workforce.
A firmware update for humans. I feel like I need one of those some mornings.
Don't we all? But the point they're making is about what tech work looks like. For the last 20 years, the tech genius was a guy in a hoodie writing code in a dorm room.
The Mark Zuckerberg archetype, yeah.
Derrticular argues that the next unicorn, the next billion-dollar opportunity, is going to wear work boots. They call it blue-collar AI.
So it's the person who can fix the solar inverter with a wrench and debug the AI network running it.
Exactly. It bridges the digital and the physical. It's a new class of worker.
There's another social concept that stood out to me. Ministry 3.0, they talk about the Invoke system. This really surprised me. They're talking about churches.
They are. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. In many rural communities, what's the one institution that has a building, a plot of land, and a group of people, but is struggling financially?
The local church.
Right. Small congregations are dying out. Derrticular proposes using these locations as anchor nodes.
So the church becomes a data center.
The church becomes the energy hub, the ISP. By installing a sovereign node, the church generates its own revenue self-financing again. It stabilizes the institution.
That's fascinating. It's like holy Wi-Fi. But seriously, it shows they are thinking about the social fabric, not just the wires.
It's about anchoring the tech in the community so the community actually defends it.
Okay, we have to talk about the tone again. Because for all this high-minded philosophy, the last few pages sound like a battle cry.
You're referring to the final dispatch.
The window closes in 48 hours. Flood the forge. It sounds like a heist movie. What is happening here?
This is their go-to-market strategy. They're taking over an event called Code Launch. They call it the GTM Venture Forge.
And they're not looking for investors. They're recruiting founders.
This is the critical piece. Derrticular has built the road. That's iOS. They have the gas stations. Those are the nodes. Now they need people to build the cars.
The cars being the apps.
Yes.
Yeah.
The application layer. They are desperate for developers to build apps on top of their sovereign stack. Maybe it's peer-to-peer energy trading app or a decentralized Uber.
And the offer they're making to these founders is pretty aggressive.
It is. They're basically saying, if you build on our roads, we'll build your first car for you. They're offering a professional dev team to build the MVP, the minimum viable product, for the winners.
But why the rush? Why 48 hours?
The network effect. They believe the window to establish a new operating system is closing fast. If they don't get people using Rias now, the old fragile grid will just patch itself up and lock everyone in for another 50 years.
So Flood the Forge is an instruction to just overwhelm the system with new ideas.
You want to create so much momentum that the shift becomes inevitable.
So let's zoom out. We started with the fragility of the grid, the Christmas lights. We looked at Derrticular's solution, spherical resilience, the starfish.
We talked about Rios and radio frequency fingerprinting, using physics to create truth so money can flow to places like Uganda.
We toured the global nervous system, the brain in Canada, the blast furnace in Arizona, the economic engine in Africa.
And we saw how they're trying to upgrade the workforce into these sovereign power technicians. It's a massive vision, and it all comes back to one core concept, anti-fragility.
Walk me through that one more time.
A fragile thing breaks under stress. A resilient thing, like the starfish, resists stress. But an anti-fragile thing, it gets stronger when you stress it.
Like a muscle. You tear it, and it grows back bigger.
Exactly. Derrticular is betting that as the world gets crazier, more storms, more hacks, more instability, their system won't just survive. It will thrive. Every time the main grid fails, the sovereign node looks better.
They're betting against the stability of the world.
They're hedging against chaos.
That is a lot to process. But I have one final question for you that's been nagging at me.
Let's hear it.
If this works, if a community in Arizona or Uganda can generate its own power, verify its own data, and finance its own growth, all without a central utility company or a central bank.
I see where you're going.
What happens to the utility company? What happens to the government's role in all this? If I'm my own power company, do I really need them?
That is the ultimate provocation of sovereignty. Mm-hmm. We're used to outsourcing our survival to the grid. If the lights go out, we call the 1-800 number and complain. We are dependent, but we're also absolved of responsibility.
Right. It's not my fault the lights are out.
But in a sovereign post-grid civilization, if the lights go out, you are the power company. There's no one to call.
That sounds incredibly empowering, but also kind of exhausting.
Freedom usually is.
Well, on that note, I think I'm going to go check my flashlight batteries, just in case.
Probably a good idea.
Thanks for taking this deep dive with us. We'll catch you on the next one.